Welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and it's good to be here with you on this Friday full of mist and rain. But we'll have some good rainy day conversations you can settle into, one that we hope will be the start of many about the controversy surrounding large cruise ships and their impact on our community. Also, we'll preview two virtual performances that are part of a valiant effort to keep arts alive during this pandemic. Kingfishers, Townsend Warblers, and Greater Yellow Legs, they're giving concerts of their own. Now the forecast, expect rain tonight and tomorrow, otherwise cloudy. Snow showers are possible near Eagle Crest, lows tonight in the lower 40s. Juno Afternoon, we'll be right back after National Native News.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheese.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm Rhonda McBride. Please pardon my mixed metaphor, but Juno is indeed at a crossroads when it comes to cruise ships. The big ones, anyway. We are going into our second tourist season without their presence, and now we have the prospect of several voter initiatives that could potentially limit their impact in the future. Over the coming weeks, here on Juno Afternoon, we hope to have a series of conversations about this, so think of today's as the first installment of many. But today we are not going to get into a debate about the issues. We will be talking with two members of the group Protect Juno's Future today, and then on Monday we'll hear from Juno Cruise Control, and after that we'll have more discussions with both of the groups involved sitting down together and giving us maybe an education on what the cruise ship industry means to Juno. But joining us now, the former mayor of Juno, Bruce Botello, and Laura Martinson, owner of Caribou Crossings, and they are very involved in this group to protect Juno's future, and they are in opposition to the ballot initiatives that we will be considering perhaps this year. But anyway, first of all, Bruce, I would like to start with you, since you've got a long history of watching the cruise ship issue in our community. Why is it important for you to get a conversation going?
Thanks for the question, Rhonda. I would start by saying that all sides appreciate that the cruise industry brings a lot to Juno, and that it is an important economic driver. And what I think is reflected in the initiatives is also reflective of tensions that have been with our relationship as a community with the industry virtually over the last 30 years, which is how much is too much, and can we sustain the growth and protect Juno's quality of life? And I think that is perhaps where there are fundamental differences. Everyone, I think on both sides, values Juno's quality of life, and I would like to think that those on in support of the petition also recognize that there is a great economic value to the industry, particularly as we've seen over the last decades, a dramatic decline in government employment, which had been the mainstay of our economy for three or four decades. But long and short, the importance of the questions reflect the importance of the industry, and not the cruise lines themselves, but the local entrepreneurs who have invested in the community, employ hundreds of people who are local residents and who draw their livelihoods from those visitors.
So I'm going to go to Laura Martinson, who has a business at Caribou Crossings. And Laura, it's interesting that the title of this group that you formed, Protecting Juno's Future, either side of this debate could claim that they are trying to do that, protect Juno's future. There's a little bit of irony in that. Or was that intentional?
Well, for me, you know, when I think about Juno's future, obviously I think about myself, but I also think about my daughter. And I wonder what kind of community will she grow up in? What kind of opportunities will be there for her? Will she have the same opportunities I had? Will she have the same economic opportunities that I've been afforded in my own hometown? So I feel very fortunate that I get to live here where my grandfather is, where my parents are. Now my daughter's here. But will she be able to be here near me? If I choose to stay here and retire here, will my daughter and her family be able to do the same without a really sustainable economic future? That really gets called into question.
Well, we've certainly had a taste last year and then going into this year with the absence of the big cruise ships and the impacts at large. Bruce, what do you think is the aha moment in all of this for you as someone who has watched Juno's growth and development over the years?
My experience serving on the mayor's economic stabilization task force over the course of roughly 6 to 8 months in 2020, we were responsible for coming up with proposals to try and save Juno businesses. And we, over the course of those months, heard from numerous businesses, individuals whose businesses were on the brink and were only sustained by a combination of federal, state, and local monies that were made available to them to be able to survive a season, and actually more than a season, because we're talking about businesses whose primary income comes during the 5 months of the cruise year. And so to the extent that you've taken that out, they have actually been without significant revenues in this particular case since October of 2019, and we're expected to hang on until 1st of May of 2021, and here we are, and faced with the highly likely prospect that we're not going to see a season here. There is the possibility that by August we may see some ships, presuming that some of the larger lines are able to deploy ships, are able to sell spaces. But for the most part, if we're unable to do that, we're talking about businesses again who are going to have to make it until May of 2022. And so I guess my aha was the discovery and increased awareness of the economic devastation that the absence of the ships would have had, but for massive intervention of government money. Government money that may not be there this coming year.
Laura, how about you? You are directly plugged into the business community. What is it that the community may not realize that you see every day?
You know, from my perspective, I see the way my small local business interacts with the entire community every single day. So between the electricians I'm hiring, the CPA I'm calling, the employees that I'm hiring, the artists that are making the work that I sell in my store, my one little business, you know, I totaled it up the other day. It's over 130 other local businesses that I do business with. And that's, you know, that's aside from 70 Alaskan artists and 125 local women that we've hired over the decades. And so that's just one little tiny piece. And I imagine if every other local business like mine is doing the same, to me it looks like it's like roots on a tree, and it's all sustaining us together. That's holding up our entire community together. And I feel like those roots run so deep and they're so vast. I don't think it's easy for everyone in the community to see how far those roots stretch from each local business. You know, we really are all in cruise tourism together.
That's probably a good analogy, right? Is so much of the knowledge about how tourism and the cruise industry affects us is all kind of underground, a lot that we don't know that's happening that affects us. So, Bruce, tell me a little bit about the issues, and we'll ask the same question to the Juno Cruise Control Group. What are the issues that we're going to have to keep on the front burner to make decisions about this? In your mind, give us some bullet points.
Well, if one looks at the initiatives themselves, the overall outcome is to limit the number of passengers that will be able to be hosted in Juneau. And that's accomplished through, first, eliminating cruise ship visits on Saturdays, second, by limiting their visiting hours from 7 a.m. Or 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., which has some consequences that I think most people would not expect, which is, in short, the realization that not all ships can leave at the same time. Passengers are going to have to be on board 2 hours before a ship sails. And if you're talking about being out by 7, you're going to have some ships that are going to have to leave by 4:30. Passengers have to be on board by, let's say, 3 o'clock. You've already eliminated tour opportunities locally or the opportunity to shop. And the third, probably most far-reaching, is to say that after the 2026 season, no ship with a gross weight of 100,000 tons or more can call on Juno. Well, we already have vessels of that size, and if you were to take those that showed up in Juno in 2019, the effect of that would be to eliminate roughly, I think, a third of the cruise ships, but a majority of the passengers. And so those are, I think, the dramatic consequences of the proposal, of the proposals, I should say. I mentioned, I think, earlier that as we were discussing, that the mayor had a visitor industry task force, which completed its work in March of 2020, presented it to the assembly immediately at the point that pandemic hit. The assembly properly turned its entire focus into dealing with the pandemic and is only now in a position to take up these kinds of issues. The report, among other things, calls on the city to take a more proactive role in planning the role of the cruise industry in Juneau, that we should have full-time staff that are working the issue, that we should be taking a much more active role in the controlling the ship arrivals and departures to eliminate, among other things, the peaks during the course of the week, and to be more long-term, talking about where we think the industry should go in Juneau, how much larger it should be, how do we manage? And to me, those are approaching this in a systematic way. Getting maximum input is by far a much healthier way than simply embedding in our local constitution, which is the charter, three provisions that have nothing to do with government structure, but attempt to manage manage cruise ships through charter amendments.
So perhaps this initiative may have some good things, whether it passes or not, because it's putting the city and borough's feet to the fire to act on those recommendations that sort of got sidelined when the pandemic set in.
Well, that's certainly an argument, and I think it's been advanced that this is certainly going to precipitate dialogue. I wouldn't want to suggest that the assembly wasn't prepared to take this up until the initiatives were made public. It was clearly a plan to take it up, and personally would give it the space to run its course. I understand others feel very frustrated that actions have not been taken before, and this unfortunately is viewed as their only alternative, but that's not where I come down on it. And I guess having dealt with the cruise industry at either the local or state level since the late 80s, I have I won't say relaxed view, but one that recognizes it takes time to make change. And change is more effective and long-lasting if people take the time to work through the issues, examine all sides dispassionately, and come to a solution that a vast majority of the public will accept.
It is very tough when you have a pandemic that just sort of thwarts everything. One of the things, and I wanted to talk with you, Laura, about this, is you do have a fundraiser or a get-together that's being billed as the launch to the official kickoff to the tourism season, and that's happening as soon as you leave the studio.
Yeah, so one of the things I love about being in the tourism industry is we are a fun bunch. We are the hospitality folks, and we, over the last 15 months, have really missed this kind of social gathering with each other and with our community. So we're going to be at one of our very favorite local spots, Deckhand Dave's, today from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., and we're going to have buttons and flyers and sign-up sheets of all the different ways you can sign up to protect Juno's future. But really, we're just so excited to be able to get together safely and kick off another summer season in Juno, even though it looks a little bit different than what we're used to. I think we're all just really looking forward to getting back out there and getting back together with our own industry.
Well, we look forward to talking more about this. And like I said, we think of this as sort of the first installment in a deeper conversation. And we are going to be hearing from Juno Cruise Control on Monday, and also an introductory conversation. And I hope what we can do is sit down, pick some topics, and really dive into them. Because really, isn't this more about something other than just pros and cons here in this discussion?
You know, I think the really, really important thing for me, for everyone in our community to know, is that we live here and these are our friends and neighbors and this is our home, and we want what's best for Juno just as much as anyone else does. And I think the best way to get there is real inclusive dialogue with open listening ears and empathy. And I really think we can get there as a community if we just keep listening to each other.
Bruce, you get the last word on this.
I think Laura has eloquently stated our view.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us today, former Mayor Bruce Patella and Laura Martinson, owner of Caribou Crossings. Thanks, both of you, for being with us today.
Thank you.
The Juno Dance Theater has had to dance around the pandemic while staying on point with a virtual performance. They'll be joining us, and what you're listening to is an excerpt from a piece that will be performed from the Juno Symphony.
Tickets are now on sale for the 2021 Wearable Art Extravaganza. Prepare to be transported out of your home and into adventure during the 10-day festival in May. Wearable Art Intergalactic features a live stream show, trivia nights, living gallery, drive-in movie, and more. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit jahc.org/wearable-art.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Juno Dance Theater brings ballet to us both to behold and experience, and maybe not in the way that we would have in the past. But there is still a way to appreciate all that's gone into the Juno Dance Theater's upcoming concert. And joining us now, we have Bridget Lujan. She is executive director of the Juno Dance Theater. And Zachary Hench, he's artistic director of the company. And I guess this is really exciting that you have put a lot of effort into a virtual concert. Zachary, you know, how different is this for you to be putting what is normally on a big stage with a big crowd together in a different format?
Do you mean as far as doing a virtual performance versus a live one? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about, because typically, you know, you have students of all ages and different groups, and they go on a big stage and their parents are right there in the audience. And it probably has to stretch your creativity to figure out how to bring that same level of excitement.
Yeah, certainly. You know, this is our first attempt at doing a virtual performance from the stage. So certainly a learning curve for everybody. But one of the big challenges, I think, and something that we missed in the filming of this was the synergy that takes place between the audience and the artist. So without that, we did our best to make it everything it would normally be in a normal performance, minus the audience. So the stage lights are still there, the music is still there, the spotlights are on them. And we didn't stop and start, you know, in between, during a piece. So we really tried to run it like it was a full performance so the students could really get the feel of that.
Well, Bridget, you are working with the students and their families all year long. Do you think this has been a big growth process?
I think we've all learned a lot along the way. mostly where there's a will, there is a way. And it was critical for Juno Dance Theater to find a way to be operational this past year. We are heavily reliant on our tuition revenues. And if we are not teaching class and having students come through our facility, then we're not paying our rent and paying our faculty. So a growth experience for all of us. And everyone was just kind of on board and of the mindset that we'll do whatever we need to do to make things happen and do it in a safe way.
So you've got kids of all age groups that you're working with, and you have to put together these dances. So maybe you could prepare us for what we're going to see, because looking at this YouTube video that's been posted of some of the rehearsals, it looks pretty amazing as it is that these young people have been putting in a lot of hard work.
Sure, yes, they have been. You know, as soon as we finished up our virtual Nutcracker performance, we went right to work on the spring performance. So yeah, age ranges from 3 all the way up to, you know, we do offer adult classes, and there was a tap piece that featured one of our adults as well. So all the way from 3 years old, you know, through adulthood and everything in between. So it's they work really hard. We didn't know if we were gonna be able to have access to the theater. Yet they still keep working really hard, you know, despite that. To them, I don't think it really mattered what the outcome would be. It was all about the work for them, and they knew there would be some sort of outcome. So, you know, we were really thrilled that we could at least get into the theater and give them that theater experience.
So, Bridget, why don't you give us the particulars about how we can enjoy this, where we go to watch this virtual performance and where it takes place?
Well, it is as easy as a click of a button at junodance.org. You can, there's several different locations on our webpage there to purchase tickets for a spring showcase. They are set show times. So tonight and tomorrow, so 14th and 15th at 7 p.m., that's a hard start time. It's not an on-demand event. So, and then Sunday at 2. It's $15 per device, so bring the whole family into the living room and crowd around the laptop or a TV and enjoy it together. We we don't have a way to control that, so we weren't even going to try to say, you know, group admissions, but it's just $15 per device, and it's one device, you know, you get your access code and click the link to start the show when it's showtime and type in your access code, and there you are.
You know, when you think about kids and how hard they work towards something, why is it important that we turn out to support them and give them their due?
That's a great question. I guess it kind of comes with the parenting territory. So parents are always a bit of our built-in audience, and they'll do whatever they need to support their children in their activities. As far as a broader reach into the community, I think that's a goal for every arts organization everywhere, whether they are serving youth or adults, and just trying to reach that greater audience. So why is it important? Well, we hope that the Juno community has an understanding and appreciation for what our organization is doing and trying to do, and enriching the art appreciation and the artistic value of our children and our children's education.
So what do you think, Zachary? I mean, what have these kids achieved, especially during a time of pandemic? And it couldn't have been business as usual in your dance company.
Sure, it absolutely was not business as usual. We had to pretty much alter our whole approach, smaller class sizes, less of them because of that. But they've really persevered through everything and really never wavered in their dedication to this art form that they love so much. And it's really rewarding to see their progress from day to day, week to week, month to month, and year to year. You're watching these children just grow as people, as dancers, as artists. And it's you feel like you're one of their parents as well, or I do, and just couldn't be prouder of them. They're doing something with their lives. They're doing something really worthwhile, and they can tell that. Children can tell that, even at a very young age. They know that they're focusing their energy on something really important, and certainly important to them. So really amazing to see their progress from small to, older. We have four seniors that graduated this year, and I'm watching them in the audience nearly in tears, thinking about them when they were little kids, and then watching them now and how much they've grown. And again, not only as dancers and artists, but as people. So it's just enriching in every way.
And perhaps that's the part that we don't fully appreciate, is the personal growth, and that will be on full display. All right, well, we are out of time, but I want to thank you very much, Bridget Lujan Hahn and Zachary Hench, for joining us and giving us a preview of the Juno Dance Theater's performance, which begins tonight. So thanks very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're still on our theme of virtual concerts, how the Juno Symphony has refined it to an art form. Welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. It's great to have you join us as we spend some time sharing some of the great things that are going on in our community, and here's one of them. Dvorak String Quartet No. 12 in F major, one of the pieces that's going to be performed in the Juno Symphony's upcoming festive finale concert, which premieres this Sunday at 3 o'clock. It's a virtual performance done in collaboration with this station, with KTOO, so you can watch as well as listen. And joining us to talk about that, we have Charlotte Truitt with us. She's the symphony's executive director, and Frank Felkel. He's the concertmaster and director. Well, since the pandemic, boy, a lot has changed, but it seems like the Juno Symphony has really tried to be creative in bringing virtual concerts. How do you feel about this upcoming concert?
Good afternoon. Oh, well, thank you. I don't know. We keep having to learn something new every time. This upcoming concert is our sixth virtual concert, so we've learned a few things along the way, and certainly by going to multiple locations, it's been something new to learn each time. We've been at Mindenhall Glacier, Holy Trinity Church, State Library, Archives and Museum, the Klan House at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and this weekend we are at Eagle Crest Ski Area. And so it's been exciting, and it's been a fun adventure, and certainly lots to learn. And we couldn't be more pleased with the collaboration with KTOO, Betsy Sims of Studio A, our musicians. I think I totaled up, we have about 68 musicians who had opportunity to play during the pandemic. And it's been very exciting. And we're so grateful for the support of the community and all those who are partnering with us to make it happen.
Franz, I imagine that typically before a concert, when it's before a live audience, that you probably get a little butterflies, maybe the musicians do, kind of have to build up this energy to go before a live audience. So is it a change of pace to be able to sit back and watch the concert on TV?
Kind of funny. The first time we did this, I still got those butterflies. I think all the musicians got those butterflies. Now, this time, you know, after doing it six times this year and me knowing the drill, you know, those butterflies subsided a little bit when we first started recording. But I know, I mean, I talked with the musicians who had done it for the first time this time, and they, you know, they said it's a weird feeling. There's no audience, but you still get nervous, you know, because it's still, you know, it's still a recording. So, yeah, but it's nice to kind of sit back and watch the show happen without, you know, being involved 100% of the time, you know, in it, and you can just sit back and relax. We don't often get to do that.
So what about this location? Because when you regularly perform in a theater, you're sort of used to its acoustics, and there are some regular venues that you have. I know you switch them up sometimes, but how about performing at Eagle Crest? What was that like?
Actually, it was quite nice. You know, I wasn't expecting great acoustics, but, you know, the whole building, it's got really tall ceilings, and it's wood, and it's got carpet, which can be nice. It kind of deadens the sound a little bit. And Eagle Crest was wonderful for acoustics. And actually, most of the places that we were able to record and perform in had great acoustics in and of themselves.
Yeah, that is kind of intriguing. I guess it's opened the horizon, so to speak, widened them for where you might be able to perform in the future.
Definitely. I think the first time I walked into the Klan House where we recorded, I looked at Charlotte. I said, why aren't we having chamber music performances here every week? It's a wonderful space, and it's perfect for chamber music.
Boy, I have yet to hear music performances there, and I really look forward to that opportunity. And to sit in that room, you feel like you are in a womb. one of the things that intrigues me, and Charlotte, maybe you can answer this as the executive director for the Juno Symphony. On your webpage, I love the little slogan that you have, "Keep Arts Alive," and it seems like that in itself has been a very creative activity this year.
Well, it has kept us very busy. You know, we've really tried hard to continue keeping our musicians active and our audience engaged. We've found ways of connecting with youth through music theory classes, which Franz conducted over Zoom in the fall, and involving young people in our concerts. We had high schoolers involved in our holiday brass concert, and they will also be involved in this coming concert as well. I think folks got to hear a little bit of them at the opening of the program. But we've tried to keep everything moving forward. We contributed to the youth music departments at the high schools to provide some additional funding for their microphones and things as kids are trying to work from home. You know, things are opening up now, and I think things are on their way. But it's certainly very important that we keep the arts alive and in the minds and hearts of our young people that are coming up. They will be the future of our orchestral music. And we don't want to see a big gap. We're trying to help fill those areas so that there's not a big gap a few years from now, for sure. So, yeah, I think a lot of people have joined together to be very creative to make things work.
Well, Franz, the one piece that we played coming into this interview was the Dvorak string quartet piece. And I understand that three high school students were performing in that. How do you feel when you hear those students at that level being able to keep up with the adult members of the orchestra?
Oh, I was so proud of them. That's the last movement of the of Dvorak American Quartet, which is a really famous quartet. And two of my private students, Lila Quigley and Alex Yu, were on violin. And then our principal cellist, her student, Megan Johnson, her student, Finn Morley, was playing. And then they got to also work with our principal violist, Julia Bastuchek. And she performed with them. And so it was great. It was really special to hear them. I told Charlotte I was more nervous watching them record than recording myself. But they did a great job, and I'm so happy that they were able to be a part of this production.
So what does this say when you see kids perform at that level? What does it say about the symphony? What does it say about the community?
It means that Juno has always had a really productive arts community. Since I was growing up, before I was growing up, I'm a product of the Juno arts community and the music community, and I think it's continuing. And even through these hard times, it continues to grow, and we see that in our youth today and at the quality of their playing.
So this is your finale of the season. Charlotte, what are some of the things that we might look forward to? Because it sounds like looking at some of what's coming up, that it's a mix of classical and jazz.
Yes, this concert is kind of modeled after what we would typically have as a pops concert. So a lot of popular music, of course, and a combination of classics and then some more current music, such as we have a unique offering is an octet of trombone. Eight trombones are playing together, and we even have a number where we have a rhythm section backing them up. So they'll be sharing pieces like Gonna Fly Now from the Rocky movie, Georgia on My Mind, Deep River, Cabbage Town Blues, The Lonesome Road from James Taylor, Amazing Grace, the American folk hymn, and it's just incredibly beautiful in the arrangement. And then Back to the Fair is another popular one. Folks will know that as the Scarborough Fair. It's a more well-known title of that. But we have an amazing group of musicians gathered. And I think there's going to be a little something for everybody to enjoy. And people will recognize a lot of this music. Franz and Alan Young had a lot of fun sharing a little bit of classical humor with everybody. And a great little PDQ Bach piece. I don't know, Franz, if you wanted to chat about that a little bit.
I think we'll save it for our audience. Just
for the audience.
Know that there's a surprise in store. Not all classical music is serious.
It's all serious music, very serious. Yeah. So,
well, Miko Wilson in our television production department was able to provide me with a few little clips, and I just have to play this. This is the trombone section being very robust. So let's take a listen. Now that's really fun to listen to, those deep bass tones. Must have been fun to watch.
Yeah, it's a really great group of very talented musicians, and we have a feature on that one with Mike Busey, who many people know in the local jazz scene here. He's really a phenomenal jazz trombone player. That's kind of his forte, and he's featured in a couple of the numbers.
All righty. Well, before we wrap things up here, we better tell people how they can partake of the finale, the grand finale of the season.
Well, our festive finale can be purchased on our website, and just go to junosymphony.org. You can get those tickets there. It's $30 per household. And if you want to share and buy another ticket for friends and family near and far, we've had people from 13 cities in Alaska and 18 states around the country being involved. So if you want to showcase Juno and let people see Juno, this is a good opportunity to do that. And those gift subscriptions are just $15. So just head over to junosymphony.org and we'll get you set up. You can watch the concert for 2 full weeks on demand. So if you're not able to watch Sunday at 3 o'clock, that's fine. You'll have the link available for 2 full weeks to watch as often as you want, whenever you want during those 2 weeks.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you for joining us today to give us a preview of what sounds like a fun event coming up. And you have a lot of options in front of you. Thanks, both of you.
Thank you.
All right. And coming up, we are going to visit with Brenda Wright and find out about all the different birds that are out there giving a concert of their own. But first, bird note.
This is Bird Note. When Swainson's thrushes first return to nest in the woods of the West or the northern states in Canada, they announce their presence with subtle calls, limpid whit or wink sounds. About a week later, generally at dusk, they break into full song. Many rate the Swainson's thrush among the finest singers. And two of its closest contenders for musical elegance are also close cousins, the veery and the hermit thrush. All three are small brown birds, but their songs, each reedy or flute-like, clearly distinguish them. While a Swainson's thrush song spirals upward, a veery's phrases tend downward in pitch. The hermit thrush sings ethereal, paired phrases, long flute-like notes backed by complex, reedy phrases. Each is worthy of a long, silent pause in the woods. The Swainson's thrush. The veery. The hermit thrush. Did you know BirdNote delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox? Sign up for our newsletter at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
Support comes from Nugget Alaskan Outfitter, providing a curated selection of goods from sunglasses to rain gear to live, work, and play in Southeast. Open Monday through Friday, 10 to 8, Saturday, 10 to 6, Sunday, noon till 5 at the Mendenhall Mall.
Well, it's always great to hear Bird Note as a prelude to our visits with the Juno Audubon Society. You know, birds of every feather flock to Juno every spring, and Brenda Wright has been joining us regularly to highlight some of our annual visitors. So I guess one of the things we might start off with is, what are you spotting lately?
Well, that's a great question. I love this time of year. We have so many different birds passing through. This is the feast. Every low tide, the smorgasbord is open and free. So we have tons and tons of things passing through.
That's a great metaphor. So you've been having self-guided walks with information for people to be able to follow along and have specific places to spot these birds. Any locations you're recommending right now?
Yes, the real hot spot is the mouth of rivers. Right now, we especially like to say the Mendenhall River on the Airport Dyke Trail side. But you have to go down near the mouth, because that's where the plovers and the sandpipers, dunlins, dowitchers, tons of ducks, all kinds of things are hanging out down there, just chowing down, getting some more fat in their bodies so they can fly up north.
Well, Brenda, I want to just thank you for being here to kind of be our lookout for the birds. And it's something that you're hoping to do all summer. And one of the things we're doing with these sort of weekly visits is identify a few birds and not only talk about what they look like, but what they sound like. So I've got some sound that you provided for me of the greater yellow legs. I like that name. Before I play the sound, tell me about the greater yellow legs. I think they have great legs, right?
Yep, and they're yellow. Yeah, the greater yellow legs is one of the birds that spends a lot of time with us. It comes early and stays late, but it is a shorebird, a tall one. Long yellow legs, a beak that's twice as long as its head for sure. And you can see it in very many locations. It likes to nest in musk eggs. So you might hear it flying over your house in morning and evening when it's going down to have lunch.
That sounds like a hungry bird to me, Brenda.
You know, the thing about them is if you don't want to get too close to where they're nesting, because they'll scream that for 14 or 15 hours till you leave.
Well, thanks for the heads up on that. I don't want to be screamed at by a bird. So our next bird that we're featuring this week is the kingfisher. So give us a little sense about why this bird is unique.
Well, it's one of those birds that, because of its crest and the shape of its head looks a little bit large for its body, but it has this really long spear-like beak that is exactly what it uses it for to catch fish. And it lives with us all year round. And one of the really nice things when you get to see them is that the female has a red band across her chest and the male has a blue.
All right, well, let's take a listen to the kingfisher. That kind of sounds almost like some kind of a ratchet or something almost mechanical a little bit.
Exactly. And the nicest thing about it is that it does that the whole time it's flying. And so you can hear that noise and start looking for it because it'll be around you somewhere. And they have a very, very distinct way of looking for fish. They hover like a hummingbird. They hover above the water 20 or 30 feet, flapping their wings really, really hard, and then dive straight down. Bam, get a fish.
So we got one more bird to tell you about, the Townsend warbler. And I understand that the male and the females also look a little different when you see them.
Yep, they're one of the few warblers that has a pretty similar pattern. But the female, as usual, is a little bit duller because she spends more time brooding the eggs on the nest.
The birds sound just a little bit more musical than some, so I'm going to go ahead and let you hear some. Now that's rather high pitched. Distinctive.
Yes, our warblers. Yes, it's nice to be a distinctive one. There's two that sound a little bit too similar for me. But all of our warblers, they come this time of year because they concentrate on bugs. So they wouldn't be here in the wintertime.
So what's it like, very quickly before we run out of time, what's it like in the rain to be out checking out these birds? Do they hide more from us in the rain? Are they harder to see?
You know, when they first get to town, especially the shorebirds that are... They've used up all their fat reserves just to get here. All they want to do is eat. So if you sit quietly, they'll surround you. It's even better if you're in a kayak, because as the water floats you in, they'll just ignore you completely because you're just another part of the water.
And that's important that you mentioned that you need to sort of be prepared to sit and wait. But that probably has its rewards.
Yes. But they are very thick. There's more species right now than we usually see any other time of the year out there on the wetlands.
All right. Well, I want to thank you very much, Brenda Wright with the Juneau Audubon Society, for giving us our pulse on the bird life that is out and about right now in the region. Thank you.
And enjoy birding. Thank you, Rhonda.
All right. Thanks, Brenda.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klinkit & Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
Monday on Juneau Afternoon, the group Juneau Cruise Control will weigh in on the cruise ship controversy on the heels of today's discussion with Protect Juneau's Future, the group that spoke to us earlier in the show. And we will also hear about a survey assessing the needs of seniors both now and into the future. And that will do it for Juneau Afternoon. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Rhonda McBride, your host for today. And we want to mention that KTOO Arts and Culture produces Juneau Afternoon. That team is led by Cheryl Snyder and includes Shelley Delaney and Chandra Zaffron. And we had help today from our canine friends at KTOO, Rio and Thea. Thank you all for joining us.